Welcome to That Mom Life. I'm Sarah Jordan, and I am so excited to have a guest back for a second time. I do believe this is the first time I have done this, but given the year that we're having, I think it's also crucial to have this person back. This is Dr. Christy Lane. She is the pediatrician to my children, but also so many kids in the community. And I'm so thankful that you're back.
Thank you. Thank you, Sarah. Thanks for having me back.
You're in much better health since the last time I spoke to you. Last time I spoke to you was back in May, yes. Which seems like it was 15 years ago.
I know, right?
But COVID times. You were recovering from a hysterectomy. How are you feeling now?
Like $1 million. It's amazing.
Not having
a period is like so awesome. I can't even tell you. It's just amazing.
I would like that.
It's pretty awesome. Pretty awesome.
After baby three, as I'm sure you obviously understand, because you actually have four kids, it's like your body becomes more hateful as years progress.
Yeah, it's terrible. It's like, yeah, I don't understand. It just hates you. Yeah.
Well, I think it's crazy. We referenced that like it's COVID times in May seems like 15 years ago. And for me, time is such a weird word this year because I feel like time is passing faster than ever and as slow as possible at the same time. But it's like even thinking back to May, in April, in March, it is crazy to me how much has changed, how much things have changed in the world, how much more we know, even though it seemed crazy back then too. Do you feel that way?
Yes. Yes. I feel like every day I wake up and I'm like, okay, what do I need to learn today? Because it's changed. Something has changed. So what do I need to learn about this disease so that I can take care of my patients and be able to give information to the community? Because it is just, I tell people it's like being a human. It's like being in a human pinball machine. You know, you're just like this ball, just being like, bam, 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 bam. I mean, all the time. And having to weed out the stuff that is, you know, not factual, not accurate, and you know, go through the stuff that is, and how do you break that down for people, and how do I use that? How is this clinically relevant to me as a pediatrician, and how do I incorporate these best practices into, you know, taking care of my patients, taking care of my staff. It's just all day long, constant. It is, my brain like hurts so bad.
You obviously went to a school for a long time to become a doctor. And at one point, I remember you also wanted to be like, you were very heavily into research aside of being a doctor. Do you feel like you've learned more in a short period of time in the last 8 months than you had to necessarily sometimes during med school?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think the craziest part about this is that we all know that through science, we come to understand, you know, disease better and how we manage and care for those with different afflictions. But I've just never in my life seen anything quite like this. You know, I know that if I go back 10 years, I'm gonna think about, oh, okay, how do we manage this? And now that it's changed, but it wasn't like 5 million changes within 3 months. It was like, you know, a change here and a change there over the course of a decade and how you clinically manage something. You know, it is just like every other day, there's something that is dramatically different. Either they say that this drug doesn't work or this drug does work. And then they go back and say, no, it doesn't work. Or, you know, what are the studies showing? And, you know, then the guidelines are forever changing. It's like having a lawyer. I tell my husband this all the time. Okay. I'm like, he's a lawyer. I'm like, Chris, do you know what this is like? This is like every day you have to go to Facebook to get your information because you can't find it anywhere else. So I'm on all these different groups, like an epidemiology group for COVID, a physician's mom's group for COVID. I'm on docs reopening schools for COVID, a pediatric physician COVID group. I'm on another doc group for COVID. So I have all these groups that I have to look out every day to see that I don't miss something that is going to impact what I do. And that's how I figure out like, oh, well, the CDC has changed new the quarantine guidelines, you know? I mean, it's not like we get emails from the CDC saying, oh, by the way, we changed this. I mean, it's so staying abreast of all this information has been incredibly difficult. And the way that I'm getting that is through social media, which is unbelievable. Like, and I feel like that's the way most physicians are working right now. It's, you know, we're trying to get the most recent up-to-date stuff. And guess what that is? On our Facebook pages. Not the ones that, like, you know, I mean, I'm talking reputable sources, reputable doctors, you know, reputable virologists, those sorts of sources. But it's still incredibly stressful to make sure you're not missing something.
I guess, like, even to my general assumption, it's you're on some magical email list from the government.
No, that doesn't happen.
Of course.
Imagine trying to figure out how the law is going to change for tomorrow.
And especially you are on Facebook, which in the land of 2020 is a terrifying place to be on social media. But at the same time, it is very realistic that that's the number one place people are receiving their news. The reality is, though, whether or not people are reading fake news or real news from reputable sources. Obviously, you're doing it from reputable sources. But I think that's what's changed so much. You referenced 10 years ago, 15 years ago, whatever. People have information at their fingertips, or possibly false information at their fingertips. And they're trying to figure out life. And it's like when it's changing by the minute. But I mean, you're literally watching research be done in real time and it affecting lives in real time. No, I've never seen this in my 33 years of being alive.
Yeah. I mean, it creates this mental chaos, and it invades, you know, every facet of my life, because, you know, I feel like I am attached to this phone, right? Because I constantly am being barraged with questions about what do I do? What do you think I should do about this? You know, what have you heard about this? How about the vaccine if you're nursing? How about this or that? And I mean, it's just constant. And I want to be able to provide people with answers that are based in fact and science. And like I said, it's just incredibly taxing. It's incredibly taxing. And, you know, you get this mental fatigue. So not only do you have like the pandemic fatigue, which, you know, everyone's really over it, and we're just over isolation, and we're over not being able to just do and live how we want to, right? I mean, I'm tired of it, in all honesty. And, but then you have this kind of mental fatigue that goes along with it. And it really creates this, it just creates a lot of stress and anxiety.
How do you balance it for yourself? I mean, you're a mom of four. You have three sons and a daughter that you adopted. Your beautiful little Lily. How do you balance turning off being a doctor in the year of 2020?
I haven't had, not even on my vacations have I not had to deal with something. You just can't. I mean, it's too important. It's too important right now to turn off, because people's lives matter, right? I mean, this disease affects people's lives in a way that we haven't seen many diseases affect lives. And whether that's social isolation, depression, anxiety, their children failing in virtual school, quarantines, losing their jobs, you know, their friends dying, their colleagues dying, their parents dying, people in the ICUs. I mean, it's just constant. And I feel like, you know, there's always that, well, God put me here for it, so here I am. And so I feel like the boundaries are kind of really blurred during this part in time of my life. And I hope that as the pandemic kind of eases up, that, you know, I'll be able to kind of recapture those boundaries and, you know, have those places of my life where medicine doesn't invade, where COVID doesn't invade. And, you know, I look forward to that. But right now I just try to stay as mentally strong as I can and just persevere through it, because it's just not time to turn it off. I mean, there's still too much. There's too much to be done. There's, you know, people that still need factual data. And somehow I've been, you know, I feel like I've been tasked with this, and this is an important job. So, yeah, It's
do you have an escape to help keep up your mental strength? I know that you are a runner. Is that a way that you can clear your mind and help build your mental strength too?
Well, believe it or not, my husband and I get up at like the butt crack of dawn. Sorry, I said butt crack, but you know,
you're allowed to say butt crack.
You know, 4:45, 5 o'clock, and we go downstairs and work out together. I should be really skinny, but I eat like twice as much as I work out. So, you know, but we work out together and we watch just Netflix shows. You know, we've watched Breaking Bad. We've watched Better Call Saul. I still need to watch The Crown. The last season of The Crown. I mean, there's all sorts of stuff. So we kind of have our escapism every morning together and just kind of talk through the day and what do you have on tap and what are we going to do with the kids today? And
you both have very high stress jobs.
Yes. Yes. I mean, incredibly high stress jobs. And neither one of us have turned, I mean, my husband hasn't had a day off either since before this pandemic. So I mean, in terms of, we might not be in the office, but that doesn't mean we're not working. And I think that's the big picture here is that, I mean, I'm not sitting at home, you know, painting my toenails. I'm probably doing something having to do with work, and same with my husband.
Your husband in the year of 2020, he's the Floyd County prosecutor, correct?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
And that happened in what, August, September?
Yeah. Yeah. But he was pretty much acting as such while his boss was so sick, and it was just very sad. But yeah, so he's really, you know, he gets the calls in the middle of the night when they need a warrant, or the calls on the weekend if there's a shooting. I mean, it's constant for him as well, but he loves his job. He loves it. And he's glad to do it. You know, so yeah, but you know, I tell you that the running really does help. Working out does help. And just, I don't know. What else do we do? Like, I eat a lot of food. I do that.
I feel like food, sadly, I mean, this is, everyone is like, this has also become like a go-to for me in 2020, because I feel like if it brings happiness sometimes, it's just like, ooh, you know what sounds fun? Let's have nachos in bed tonight. Like something silly like that. And then I'm like, great. I just ate nachos in bed before I went to sleep. That's healthy.
Yeah. That's like heartburn, man. Yeah. Donuts. I love donuts. I've been eating lots of donuts, and I get my coffee every day. That's like a little, you know, that's a form of escapism for me. I know those are kind of lame, aren't those? Like, I mean, I can't get my organizing and stuff done, you know, just because we're so busy, but yeah.
To be completely honest, I think mine are the same. My escapisms, especially with dealing with, well, not your job and your husband's job are so much more important than mine.
Not everybody's a job.
But I mean, dealing with three kids at home, virtual learning, a one-year-old who's still breastfeeding. I mean, yeah. Like my first cup of coffee in the morning in the peace and quiet before the house wakes up is truly one of my favorite moments of the day. And then when my husband and I finally get to actually be together after the kids go to bed and like sit there and talk about the day, watch Netflix, watch reruns of stuff we've seen 1,000 times, like that, those are my tiny escapisms in 2020. Sometimes my husband and I just call them late night date nights. That's literally the first time we've had just the two of us the entire day. And it's like in bed, eating snacks, watching TV at 9:30 at night. I mean, that's it.
Right? Isn't that so bad? But I mean, aren't you, I'm just like so mentally exhausted. I really don't. You know, I love crafting. I love all that stuff. But just right now, I don't have a lot of mental energy to do most of that, you know?
How do your kids react to not one, but two parents dealing with essential jobs in 2020? You are the epitome of a frontline worker battling this thing for kids. But for everybody, how do your kids react to their parents being in these jobs?
When all of the schools shut down, you know, in March, that was incredibly difficult because they had to stay home. They were hearing about this disease. They were hearing about, you know, people dying from it left and right. And then they knew mom and dad had to go to work, whereas other parents could stay home and work from home. And so, you know, every day they would say, please don't bring it back. We don't want it in our house. Can you just, you know, make sure that you're safe? And they wouldn't want to come around me, you know, because they know I'd been seeing sick kids. And yeah, it was incredibly stressful for them. But I feel like as the pandemic's gone on and they've you know, they've kind of mellowed with it. Summer was nice for them. I feel like they had, you know, they were able to get out and do things and, you know, see people outside, distancing and, you know, in a real safe environment. And then when school started back up, cause you know, they got to go to school. And so I think that really helped them, emotionally and with their mental health. And, but as the, you know, the schools are getting shut down again and that, you know, it's creating more of an issue. I know we're in quarantine. We've been in quarantine, as a family. That's been rough. So I, you know, though, I feel like they're doing okay. I do. I feel like they're doing okay. Given everything that they have been through, I'm really proud of them. Really, really proud of them.
You know, I was just talking to someone earlier today and I said, if adults could have the same outlook on life as kids do and the same ability to adapt and the same ability to, without thinking, reach out to others. I just have read so many stories of what wonderful things kids have been doing and thinking about in 2020. And I'm like, oh, to have the brain of a child again.
Yes. Yes. That's why I love my job. Oh, I love the kids. They're just the best. They are. Most resilient, just the best.
What has been the most difficult part of running a pediatric office in the year of 2020 for you? I get clearly we're in a pandemic, but I mean, what is, I know, I mean, is it, since it's your name on the practice, what has been the most difficult part for you to keep under control?
Well, the big one is, you know, believe it or not, people think, you're a doctor, so this pandemic, you're probably slammed. And, you know, yes, in a way, everything is so much harder and takes longer because of the pandemic and the precautions you have to take to protect your staff and your patients. So everything is a lot more complicated and expensive and exhausting. But at the same time, with the shutdowns, you have less disease in the community. And then, you know, initially we weren't even doing big kid checkups. We were trying to really minimize it. So that affects the bottom line. So, you know, trying to keep your business afloat, and that's been really difficult. And thank goodness, you know, I was able to get the PPP loan. So that's helped keep us afloat. But it's, you know, going into the winter, we're starting to see the same thing. Schools have been shut down. So now we're really slowing up. And, you know, what are ways, what are creative ways that we can keep the business afloat? Especially in a day and age where people just want everything for free. Like, you know, they just want free advice all the time. And you're like, no, I mean, like, I have to keep my lights on. Like, I won't be here to give you any advice if I can't, you know, bill enough during the day. And so that's been really, really hard. And I think too, it's been hard on our families to understand our protocols are in place for the protection of their children, them and my staff. And, you know, people don't necessarily like it and they get mad. We've had families leave over it. But my feeling is, I'm sorry, this is my first responsibility to do no harm. And you can go somewhere else if you don't like it. You can go somewhere. I know that sounds harsh, but I mean, I'm not giving an inch with this pandemic. I've got to keep my business going. I can't let someone come in and expose all my staff. You know, then I'd have to shut down. I mean, whole offices have been shut down because of this. And, you know, I'm just trying to protect the livelihood of my staff and myself. So, and, you know, keep, like I said, keep my patients safe. And, so yeah, that's all just been really, really, really difficult. And, I don't think people quite understand the magnitude of the task of doing that.
I mean, you're right, because again, things are changing every single day, and it's up to you to just stay abreast of all of the information so that you can keep everybody safe. And you're right. I think people assume, oh, doctor's office or one of the offices thriving this year, or one of the businesses thriving. But it's like, wait a second, you're not a hospital. You're a pediatric facility. And you're right. If you're limiting schools and people aren't being around each other, there's less sicknesses going around in general. So, I mean, you're not able to keep up with the same amount of patient load because of the new precautions that you're having to do. I mean, there's just so many things that I think people make assumptions about with what you're doing. But at the end of the day, it's like, it has been an incredibly hard year for everybody, but especially you all, to try to keep up with everything and keep people safe. I know that we've had to be insanely careful here at my house just because of having multiple high risk people in our house, let alone kids, which I know they're not the high risk ones, the adults are. But coming to your office, I have timed out my visits, my well checks with like baby shot visits and stuff like that. And I went and I felt like, because I never get out anymore, you guys have turned into like my friends. I know the nurses. I know the nurse practitioners. I know you. I walk in there and I'm like, and one of my other friends who also goes there, she is much more careful even than I am. And she was like, I'm afraid to go to the doctor. And I was like, don't you be afraid to go to see Dr. Lane. That's a place where you're going to get to have adult time and they're going to keep your kids safe. It's a well check. And so she went and she felt much better after she went. But I mean, like we even talk, her and I sit around and talk about how wonderful you all are, because I mean, you've been there so much for my whole family this whole year too.
Yeah.
As they peek open the door.
I know. They're so cute.
My 1 year old is walking and is everywhere now.
Yeah.
See, there she is.
Yay!
She gets so proud of herself when she opens my office door. But I beyond appreciate you guys this year for being our little lifeline. And unfortunately, I'm one of those people that have had that conversation with you, like, do I go to school or do I not go to school?
I know.
Because I know you have done such an amazing job. You mentioned Facebook where you read information, but people read Facebook to get your information. And you have kind of taken upon yourself this entire year. I mean, has it even been more than a week ever since you've gone without making a video about something?
Maybe a week and a half. I don't know. About a week and a half. But then I'll do like a couple in a row to make up for it. Yeah.
Is that your way of just finding out, like, is that your way of addressing, let's just say, a lot of common questions you may have been getting on the side? It's like, okay, let's address this. Or is it after you see a bunch of like fake news online, you're like, okay, let me address this?
All of the above. Like, if something comes out and I see a lot of posts about it or whatever, I'll be like, oh man, we got to talk about this thing. Or if I get a lot of questions about it, you know, I tried to put initially talking a lot about isolation and quarantine and what does that mean and how's that look? And then I had to do another quarantine because I changed that. And then, you know, treatments and,
some of your most recent ones have been rather festive. You're making up the lyrics to songs now.
Yeah. Well, listen, we really need some COVID Christmas carols. Like, seriously, like I had to do, I want a COVID vaccine for Christmas on my own. I'm in quarantine. You know, I have a few more. I haven't written one this week, but I'm working on one. I have one. I'm thinking about it. I'm hoping to get three more out before Christmas. That's the goal. I wanted to do two a week.
I love them. Again, you do such fun ways and you get the whole staff, and your whole staff totally buys into it too, to release things. Like, what are some of the topics of your COVID Christmas carols?
Well, let's see. We did Rudolph. Poor Rudolph had COVID. Right. So that was just really sad for him. Frosty. What was Frosty's deal? Frosty was protected, I think, wasn't he? He was protected from COVID. And then we had I want a COVID vaccine for Christmas. And then what did we do? Oh, the Grinch. Yeah, the Grinch had COVID too. He was sick. Yeah. I mean, it's pretty funny. I want to try to work on a quarantine one. I've really been working on that. And I don't know what song I'm going to do it to. I have a couple in my head, but I haven't written them down. And then I get ideas too from patients. Like, I have patients sending me, like one of my patients, Paige McDowell, she actually sent me the Rudolph and I tweaked hers. So she gave me the idea for Rudolph. I have another one. I'll be home for Christmas. Another family sent me that one that I'm thinking about maybe doing. My patients are getting into it and they're even sending me like, hey, we sang this to this tune and, you know, my kids love it and they sing Rudolph. They only want to sing your Rudolph. They don't want to sing the other Rudolph anymore. And so that's been a lot of fun.
So while you bring it up and being home for Christmas, what are your thoughts about people and Christmas gathering since we're so close to Christmas at this point?
Oh man, I feel like the past week and a half that I've had so many people in my life that I care for, that they have been touched by COVID, that they have been afflicted by COVID in some way, shape or form. And, you know, I've known people with COVID, I've known people who have died, but I just feel like the past week and a half, it's just exploded. I feel like every other person's testing positive. There's an exposure. I mean, I think the numbers are just incredible right now. And, you know, with increasing cooler temperatures, there's going to be more gatherings inside. And, you know, I think everybody has to accept some form of a risk. You're going to accept a risk. What is that risk going to look like? And you have to weigh that out, you know, what you're willing to risk. And there are going to be some people that are just going to throw abandon to the wind. And my hope is that those risks that they take don't negatively impact, you know, someone that they love, because that would be hard to live with. And then there are going to be people that refuse to take any risk and are going to be very lonely. I would just tell people, you know, just do the best you can to try to have good ventilation, keep your gatherings small. Can you wear masks if inside? Just know that it doesn't matter if someone doesn't have symptoms. It doesn't matter at all, because 48 hours later, they can be sick. And this is what typically happens. You think, oh, everybody's doing great. No one has COVID. No one's sick. And then, bam, the next day someone, you know, spikes a fever. And then you've exposed your whole family. You know, but I can't mandate. I can't tell people you can't do this. And I think it's kind of silly that the government thinks that they can mandate what you can do in your home. I think that we could just ask people, just be wise and try to be safe and make the best decisions for you, but know that there are always going to be consequences to our actions. And to be mindful, you know, of those.
One of the things that I've realized this year, because we've had to be more, I would say, isolated than a lot of other people because of the high risk people, but which was even based on doctors giving those suggestions to the high risk people in my home. It's when you ask people, have you been safe? I find that that has become a very opinionated word, because it's whatever they deem is safe.
Right. And safe looks different.
Safe looks different to everybody. And then when it's like, I actually like dive into, okay, have you been doing these things? Oh, well, I did this and I do that and I did that yesterday, but no, I haven't been there in a couple of weeks. I'm like, wait a second. You just checked up all these things. That's not safe. Well, yeah, I'm being safe. I'm wearing my mask when I'm there. And I'm just like, it has been really hard for us to figure out, what does that mean? And how does that mean for other people? And this is going to sound silly, but like I compared it to somebody, it's like when you ask, I never thought in a million years I'd be asking people that I knew and some people that I, or even family members, have you been safe? It's as if I'm asking them about their sexual history. Like, that's what I feel like I'm asking. Like, can you tell me everyone you've been around, you've been with, what's happening?
Right. That's like, exactly right. It is so weird. And yeah, you feel really bad because you're like, well, if I'm going to be around this person, I didn't know everyone they've been around. And yeah, you feel like you're going in a place that you don't have a right to go in, right? Like, this is their life and they don't owe me any explanation of what they've been doing. And I think that's what makes this really difficult, is because everybody's actions affect somebody else, no matter how innocent you think they are.
Exactly. And I think that's the hardest part about it. I mean, I posted a bunch of stuff on social media. So I'm like, oh, I literally can see who you've been with and what you've been doing. And that's a no.
Yes. That's the best is when families come in like, we haven't done, you know, we haven't been around anybody. I'm like, yeah, your kid was like in a picture with five other kids unmasked and now they have COVID. I mean, what do you mean you haven't done anything? You know, I mean, I saw you at the restaurant. You put pictures at the restaurant with your friends and now everybody has COVID. I mean, from the restaurant.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, but you don't rub it in people's faces. And I know that my patients, they come in and it's like confessional time. Like I'm, you know, Dr. Lane, the Pope or something. And they're like, oh, Dr. Lane, I did this. And, you know, I'll be like, man, you know, no judgment. And, you know, I still love you and it's going to be okay. And we'll get through it because, I mean, what am I going to say? I knew it. I told you not to do that. And look what you did. Now look at this problem. You know, that's not going to help anybody, is it?
No. And that's just, it is the hard part. And I mean, we've had to have some conversations even around our house about Christmas and what to do. And some people we've created like okay, we're going to have to do parts of this outside in like a drive-by thing. We'll exchange, Here's your cookies, here's your meal. We did the gift exchange, but this is going to have to be outside. But it's like, you're right. It's the risk. And because we've had to be, I call it almost like the fortress of, but that's our thing. It's like, I've got to protect my front lines and my front lines are this house. So it's been a really difficult year. You're right. From a mental stress and anxiety point, clearly for everybody. But when you're trying to assume the roles of everybody or protecting everybody else, it's like, but I have to leave the house today. I have to go do this. So, I mean, that's why I always look forward to your posts because you have a way of talking about very serious things, but you handle them in a way not to freak people out. I mean, I'll never forget the one time when my two-year-old, when Kennedy was two, I called you and you called me back because I had to call the emergency number and you called me back at like 7:30 in the morning. And you very calmly told me, you were like, I think Kennedy is croup. Take her outside immediately because I was in the dead of winter. And you were like, you need to do that. And then I need you to get to my office as soon as possible. And I was like, what's croup? Because I had no idea what I was dealing with. And by the time I got her there, she was breathing through a coffee straw. And you handled me so calmly in a way, because if you had told me, here's what's going on and here's what could happen, I would have gone through the roof and lost it. But in the meantime, I mean, I just think as being especially a pediatric doctor, it's not even about bedside manner. You're handling not just the patient, but the family.
Oh, like gosh, yes.
You're a counselor for the parents. Yes. You're talking, the counselor for me. I'm guilty as charged.
Talking parents off the ledge every day.
Every day.
Every day. Every day. The kids are easy.
It's exactly. Give them a popsicle and they're good to go. And a sticker. They moved on. The parents, not at all. Although maybe that's what I need. Maybe I just need a popsicle and a sticker and I'll calm down.
Hey, I have a few dads that actually I give popsicles to. They get very excited.
See, it totally makes sense. So when you bring up schools and kids, I know this is something you and I talked about because you actually also assist some of the school systems trying to figure this out. And the school system that you're in is the one that I'm in as well.
Yeah.
This is such a loaded question, but I know ultimately you feel like school could be in session if certain protocols are followed.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, I'm re-logging on so I don't lose this. You know, absolutely. And the data and the evidence speaks to that. But there's a caveat. You know, I would say that there are many kids doing well in virtual school, especially those kids that have significant social anxiety with school. They're doing great. We have some kids on ADHD medicine that are, you know, that are now off of it, kids off anxiety medicine because their parents are able to give them what they need for virtual schooling. And so I'm thankful for that. I'm thankful for that. But, you know, that's a minority. The vast majority of kids are not doing well. Their grades are suffering. Their emotions, their emotional and mental health is suffering. And then, you know, we have a large proportion of our society that uses school for essential services such as food and safety and therapies and counseling and, services that they need. You know, that school's the only place they can get those. And so they're being disproportionately affected, especially lower socioeconomic groups. We know that COVID has affected Hispanic population, the Black population, inner city kids, very poor white rural kids in ways that is very disproportionate. And so, yeah, schools are essential. Schools are absolutely essential. This is not my opinion. This has been touted by the CDC, by Dr. Fauci, by the World Health Organization, by the leading virologists, epidemiologists, and economists and child mental health experts that say school, the risks of not being in school far outweigh any risk of getting COVID in school. I mean, that the data is frightening on just the mental health issues that we're seeing while schools have been closed. And, you know, we've got to come to grips with school's essential. School's absolutely essential. Teachers absolutely are essential. But I'm getting a lot of flack, getting a lot of heat saying, well, you don't care about teacher safety. No, I absolutely do. Like, I would never expect a teacher to go into a place that's not safe. And that is one of the reasons why I've walked around every school and I've worked tirelessly to educate and do my best to make schools safe for teachers and for students. Like, this can be done. This can be done and it needs to be done. We can't have these long-term shutdowns of schools. It's just not okay. You know, I think that we as a community we've got to come together and figure out how are we going to support the infrastructure of the schools? How are we going to get substitute teachers? How are we going to handle buses? You know, how are we going to divert necessary services to schools, say that, help with, you know, the more needy population? You know, how are we going to continue to provide services such as IEPs, 504 plans, you know, kids with dyslexia, with learning disabilities, with physical disabilities, with developmental disabilities? You know, how are we going to provide them services that they are legally required to receive during this pandemic? And, you know, we have failed on so many levels, on so, so many levels. Like, you know, there's strip clubs that are open. Strip clubs are open. Restaurants are open. Strip clubs, restaurants, you know, you name it, whatever. But schools are not. And schools have actually been shown to be incredibly safe. Yeah, there have been outbreaks, but not very many. Not very many. And I know that New Albany, Floyd County Public Schools, I see the data, I see the numbers, and I'm telling you that it is safe. It is safe. We have not had any in-school transmission that we know of based on our contact tracing, and those school nurses are rock stars with contact tracing. We have not had any in-school transmission. The vast majority of transmission occurs in the household as well as the community. And
that's like the one of the things that I realized I read in one of your videos was that, and I've repeated so many times to people, was those particular things, that it's not being transmitted back and forth between kids at school. If they have it, it is coming from the home or the community. They did not get it at school.
Vast majority. Now there are cases where there have been in-school transmission, not within our county, but I've read about them, but typically they stop. They're not outbreaks. And the vast majority are from staff giving it to kids and not kids giving it to teachers. And I think, though, you have to look at schools like when you employ the needed protections, the needed mitigation efforts, that they can be safe. If you can't do those things, then they won't be safe. Right. And so you have to be able to encourage the teachers and reassure them like, hey, we are doing what we need to do for you, because I would never ask a teacher to go into school if I didn't think it was OK. I would never do that. I took an oath.
I think it's also been super, super hard for the kids that got to go to school for 4 months and then they got shut down. Now those kids are trying to switch to all virtual. And my friends that are struggling the most with virtual learning, or their kids are, and the parents, but mostly the kids, those are the kids that, I mean, they were in and now they've been shut back out. My kids, I'm very, very fortunate. I realize I am part of the minority where my kids are doing fine.
Right.
But they haven't been in school now since March. They've totally adjusted to this other way of learning, unlike other kids that were back in the classroom and back around that community as much as I would do anything. Nothing has caused me to sob more this year, sadly, other than literally just stressing out about, are my kids okay?
Your kids are great.
They're part of the minority. I mean, it's just, I go back and forth with my friends all the time, and it's just like, I agree with you. it's just one of those things where schools are needed in so many different ways. I have another friend who, she is a former teacher. She decided to become a stay-at-home mom, but her son has a learning disability. And even though she is was a former teacher, she was like, Sarah, I am not equipped to handle this. And I can't. It's making him cry every day. It's making me cry every day because I feel like I'm failing him. But she's like, but I don't qualify for any of the special things because it's not too severe of a learning disability, but I mean, it's severe enough where he can't write well and he's in third grade. Like it's, which is obviously an issue.
Obviously an issue.
But she's like, I can't get help unless he goes to school.
That's absolutely. And that is what we are seeing time and time again. And what I'm hearing time and time again. And there is a reason the CDC, the WHO, the Indiana State Department of Health, that they have all said school, you should have school. And the Indiana State Department of Health, they strongly encourage school to continue in person, even in the red. Even if your county is in the red, the ISDH has come out and said, if you can mitigate properly in the school, you should have school. You should have it. The CDC, in areas where there is widespread transmission, you should do everything in your power to keep kids in school. I mean, this is not just Dr. Lane on a soapbox. This is, I am repeating.
Yeah, that's the thing. You say you're getting flack and it's like, wait a second. You're regurgitating fact and science. Hold on.
Yes. And I'm telling you that, I've never seen anything like it. I mean, I have teachers that are so mad at me and I'm like, I don't get it. I just don't. Like, I know that you're scared, but there has to be a point when you look at the data and you understand that through proper mitigation efforts, you can be safe and you can teach. And your risk is much less being at school than it is being around your friends or going to church on the weekend.
Well, and see, that's the thing, is they have to read your full statement even. I mean, as far as saying, like, I'm saying if these things are in place, clearly.
Right.
Now, as we go into 2021 now, we're dealing with another historic moment and the fact that a vaccine has been created.
Yay! I'm so happy.
And let's talk about the fact that you were part of the trial that made this happen.
Yes, I know. I'm so happy. Like, well,
what point did you enter the trial? Because I don't feel like it was that long ago. Was it what? Like,
yes.
When was that?
It was July. Oh, I called literally right after 4th of July when I heard about it. I called immediately and I was like, I need to be part of this. How do I be part of this? Tell me what I need to do. And the first week of August, I got my first shot. I was number 17 in the state of Indiana at Kentuckiana Adult and Pediatric Research Institute. I was the 17th to receive the injection. And I got my second injection in late August. And there you go. And so I found out that I got the real thing.
So that's the crazy part. So you were part of the actual trial research. So when you signed up for this, which is the Pfizer vaccine, which just landed in the Kentucky area this week, you did not know whether or not you had a placebo or the real thing, right?
Correct. Right. I had a 50% chance. I had no idea what I was getting. Yep.
So what a breakthrough for science. Okay. You're already a frontline worker. You're already reading research every day. And then you became part of the research.
Yes. I couldn't. I was so excited to do it. I'm like, if I can do like physically something, you know,
I want to. Outside of everything else you're doing 24 hours a day.
I want to walk the walk. Like, I am going to say, put whatever you want in me because I trust this process. I believe in vaccines, and I know that this is the way that we can change the trajectory of this pandemic. And we've got to do something. And this was something I could do. I could go and I could do this.
And what does it feel like to be a part of history now?
When they told me yesterday, when they unblinded me, because I'm a frontline worker, and they called me to tell me what I got, I screamed. It was more exciting than when I had my kids. I feel bad saying that. Maybe it's because I was drugged when I had my kids, but, I jumped up and down. I was elated. I just could not believe it. I feel like a pioneer, and on this really important, you know, really important mission, because this vaccine is, like I said, it's one step closer. It's just one step closer to being done with this stupid pandemic. And we all want to be done.
When you posted about that yesterday, and I don't know why, but like, I got a little emotional when I saw that you actually had it, because I mean, there's a line in Hamilton, which I don't know if you've watched it yet.
Oh, it says, I love it. I love it. Yeah.
History has its eyes on you.
Yeah.
And I just couldn't help think, I was like, you are helping out so much every single day, but you're not just doing your job. This is your life. You were a part of a vaccine. My friend, actually, her dad was the pilot who flew the first vaccines into the state, because they were my former neighbors who lived in my former house. So like, I just had all these emotions, because I was like, oh my God, these people that I know personally are the pilots bringing in the vaccine, and they are getting the vaccine, one of the first people. And it's mind blowing to me that something this monumental is happening right before our eyes, unlike anything I've ever seen in my generation, by a landslide. I mean, clearly I've seen a lot of terrible things happen but as far as a pandemic health level, something like this, this is the most I've ever been affected by something globally, or the nation, whatever. I mean, I'm just so happy that there's finally a true sign of hope. Yes, it's going to take a while to get it to everybody. But I mean, I just saw another person that I know that's a nurse. She just said, I just got signed up. I'm going to go get my vaccine tomorrow. And I'm already surprised at how many people I'm seeing that's happening.
Yes. So, yes. We're answering We're answering the call, you know?
Before I let you go, I have to what do you think is next in 2021 now that this vaccine is a reality?
Oh my goodness. I mean,
it's impossible to predict, but it changes by the minute. But
yeah, I would say that we've just got to keep pushing this vaccine and really talking to the public about this is not scary, that this has gone through all the safety checks, that this would never have been approved if it didn't meet all of those different metrics for safety. And, you know, that people have to understand, we have got to get probably over 50% of the public vaccinated to be able to even get close to herd immunity. I think it's going to be more like 60%. Because we know that the vaccine can prevent COVID, right? We also know that the vaccine, that if you do get COVID, that hopefully you're not going to be hospitalized. Hopefully you're not going to be very ill with it. It'll be short lived. And so this is one step closer to claiming victory over this disease that has just affected everybody in such awful ways. I just want people to understand that, everybody's got to be a part of this. Like, we can't just expect, oh, I hope this person gets it so I can have immunity to it. You know, it's got to be a communal effort of not being fearful and being ready to do something bigger than yourself to help those in our community that can't protect themselves and that are at the highest risk. I got pretty emotional. I got pretty emotional. Like I said, I feel like the past week and a half, COVID's really hit very close to home, and people that I deeply, deeply care for, that I worry about, you know, they're in the hospital right now. One particular lady is in the hospital and my family adores her. She's done so much for our family, and Lily. And, I just pray for her and I worry about her. I'm like, I hope that she doesn't become a number in this.
I also think, like you said, in the last month, I have known more people in my personal circle than in the last 8 months combined that have come down with COVID, some mild cases, very mild cases, some asymptomatic even, some that were more severe. I have seen some that have had to go into the hospital. I know some people now that are over a month out and they're technically the virus, they're getting negative tests, but they can barely walk around their house.
Yeah.
I saw I saw a business owner yesterday who's a small business owner trying to get stuff prepared for the holidays. And she had to tell people, sorry about your shipments. My husband's in the hospital with COVID. And so is his mom and his sister. And I was like, oh, good God. I mean, it is, we're just at a new level of it right now. And I, going to the holidays, I'm staring at three Christmas trees, even while sitting in my office. Four, if you count the chalk version on the wall too. And I'm so happy it's here. And I do think that there's so much hope going into 2021, more so than we've had all the most of 2020, especially right now with the vaccine. And I know I've told you before, but you are a hero to aww me and my family. And my kids wrote stuff about you when it was, I don't know why I'm emotional about this, but you really have been there so much for us this year in a really, really hard year. And we couldn't do this without you. And we're very thankful for you and your whole staff. You guys are so much more than just what you do on paper, but what you do personally. So thank you. And I will continue to follow all of your lovely videos and sing along. And I always tell people when I'm reading all the fake news, I'm like, find your trusted sources. And I've got a friend who is a microbiologist for the government. Follow her. Anything she tells
you. Right.
She's also one of my best friends for the last 30 years. So I very much trust her. I trust you and I trust my friend who's a nurse. And that's the only circle that I need for getting my knowledge. So thank you for your insane amount of diligence to protect all of us.
Oh, you know what? It's my pleasure. If I can put a smile on your face and you feel, you know, that you feel that you've been loved, that's my goal. So
you are absolutely the best. And thank you for everything. You.